Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? James Bostic here with the American Brand Radio Initiative. We do this program live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we also have a recorded version known as the as a conservative perspective that goes out to the Talk America Radio Network, the Internet Conservative Radio Network, and various and sundry other outlets as well. It's awesome. Just awesome to get to be here with you. We had some problems last week, and I'm hoping it doesn't happen. We've hopefully Blog Talk has fixed its glaring technical failures to the point to where we can do a radio program without catching on fire or something, and that's what I'm hoping for tonight. Last week, Tuesday show, Thursday show, both marred by dead air. You know, the microphone failed. Everything was working on our end, and I'm sitting over here jabbering like a monkey in a tree, and nothing's coming out. And that was really frustrating because Thursday night show, I was on fire. I was hot, baby. It was a good program, and I was really frustrated about that. So hopefully that's not going to happen now. Scott Kesterson, my co-host and good friend and visionary behind the American Brand, will be in at the bottom of the hour, kind of retuning the schedule. As most of you know, this show started out, ironically, as a conservative's perspective, the live broadcast version of it. And then when I met Scott in May and he was starting the Expedition Red tour as part of the American Brand, he would call in at the bottom of the hour, and we would spend a half hour talking about whatever was happening with the expedition. So that changed around August, and what happened was we decided that we would just do the full program together. And he would call in at the top of the hour, just like I do, and we would be off to the races. Well, things have been happening with the American brand, not only the radio initiative, which is going great guns. The American brand in general is taking off. We're establishing chapters nationwide in states. And if there's anybody out there listening that might be interested in starting a chapter in your home state, by all means, get in touch with us either through the AmericanBrand.org's website or the Facebook page. You can get us there too. Please do that. Okay, well, having said all that, let me say this. According to James Lewis at AmericanThinker.com, one of my go-to sites, the Trump haters have found a new authority figure to swear that the man is crazy. And if you've been following this soap opera with, you know, it's like Donald Trump has a laser pointer and the rest of the establishment news media are kittens. And, you know, he shines it over here and they all run, and they do all this stuff. And then he shines it over here and they all run back over that way and he's controlling. And they've tried everything. They've done the Russian collusion thing. They've done all these different things. So now the new thing that they're going to try is they're going to use the 25th Amendment to try and remove a duly elected president of the United States because, according to their estimations, he is unfit for office. That the Donald is crazy. And rocketing to fame on this, thanks to, as I said, the fake news industrial complex media, is a woman with the name of Bandy X. Lee. Dr. Lee, MD, for those of you in Beaver, West Virginia, that stands for Miss Doctor, is now in danger of having her license pulled by the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, because what she has been doing, and she's doing it on TV, apparently, one of those, I think maybe CNN or MSNBC. She's engaging in what is, you know, ethically prohibited long-distance diagnosis. She's not even interviewing the supposed patient in person, in this case, the President of the United States. Now, in real psychiatry, not the imaginary kind, peddled by the New York Times, Washington Post, Axis of Lies, psychiatric diagnosis is serious business, which normally involves a private interview with the clear legal consent of the patient, an explicit set of criteria covered in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, and an absolute guarantee of privacy in the patient-doctor relationship. Dr. Lee violated all those rules, and in the real world, not in the media narrative, that means that her career is at an end. Licenses have been pulled for much less than what we see here. That's probably why Dr. Lee's claimed team of fellow psychiatrists have never been named, if they exist. Dr. Lee uses the term "we" in claiming that her extremely dubious diagnosis is backed by an unspecified group of fellow experts. A real licensing board would suspend her for abusing her license to practice for obvious political payoffs, thereby bringing her profession to public ridicule and contempt. So, what are Trump's psychiatric symptoms? Dr. Lee's Exhibit A is Trump's response to Kim Jong-un, a paranoid who is incidentally never criticized by Democrats. Kim Jong-un, boasted about the big button on his desk to launch ICBMs, intercontinental missiles tipped with nuclear warheads at the United States of America, Japan, and South Korea, quite possibly even China, all within range of North Korea's missile systems. So, in response to Kim Jong-un's threat, here's what the president said. North Korean, I'm going to have to work on a Trump impersonation. That's going to be tough. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un just stated that the nuclear button is on his desk at all times. Will someone from his depleted and food-starved regime please inform him that I, too, have a nuclear button? But it is much bigger and more powerful than his, and my button works. So... If you know Donald Trump, this is his Twitter language. This is what he says, okay? And, you know, the response that he gives is, okay, well, you know, you got yours, but mine is bigger than yours. So shut up, Cartman. Well, that's how Donald Trump talks and tweets. And his main political motivation is to dominate the 24-hour news cycle that we have today. Trump's tweets got him elected, and how they got him elected was they gave him almost total control over the entire news cycle rather than getting stomped by the liberal media every single day. In politics, Trump's Twitters constitute the only way any Republican has managed to dominate the news since Dwight David Eisenhower. The newsies are all stacked with Democrat activists who will do anything, including suborning the FBI and the IRS to destroy Republicans. Trump has found the answer, and Dr. Lee's current smear against the president is designed to destroy Trump's favorite weapon, the off-the-cuff Twitter response. From now on, any tweet from Donald Trump will simply be another sign of psychiatric disorder, and Lee will put her diagnostic reputation on the line for that. Now, in addition, of course, Lee has effectively picked the side of Kim Jong-un, a Stalinist murderer who keeps his people in a state of perpetual starvation. I would not want to be on Kim Jong-un's side in a public quarrel, would you? It seems as if Dr. Lee has no grasp of politics, either American style or North Korean, which is possible if she's Chinese by birth and just simply does not understand American political theater. So for the last couple of years, Donald Trump's provocative tweets have provoked the mass media every single time, which is how he won the election and kept his media haters in a foaming rage. Trump doesn't expect to make friends among his fixed haters, and he's correct in that expectation. So he treats them like enemies, which he is also correct in doing. Those of us who understand how American men talk in ordinary life aren't necessarily surprised by any of this. What surprises the media is his use of Twitter. And that's also how he gets their collective goat every 24 hours. Now, either Dr. Lee does not understand how normal Americans talk informally, or she's running a political scam like so many other authority figures quoted by our mendacious media. In either case, she's liable to be summoned by her local licensing board to explain her violation of established diagnostic ethics. Normally, the licensing board would send her a cease and desist order, but this is national politics, and the AMA and the APA might just be overlooking Dr. Lee's nationally broadcast remarks. If the FBI, along with Obama's Department of Justice, can crumble in the face of Hillary Clinton's email corruption, what's the AMA going to do? Well, they're going to kowtow to Obama and Clinton like all the other professional forces in American life. Now, when President Trump wants to sound serious, he sounds like this. To the Congress of the United States, consistent with Section 108 of the National Security Act of 1947 as amended, I have enclosed the National Security Strategy of the United States. This National Security Strategy sets forth my guidance and direction for an America First foreign policy that charts a path to achieving the goals and objectives that will make America great again. Donald J. Trump, the White House. Now, a competent psychiatrist might have taken the time to read the White House website for Trump's more official language. Donald Trump speaks differently on Twitter than he does in his role as President of the United States. Now, this should not come as news particularly, but apparently the left and the establishment media are simply, they don't have it. And it's not new. What's going on with Donald Trump isn't new. In 1980, Ronald Reagan was elected president of the United States. I was 17, 18 years old. The media in those days, the establishment media, had a little bit better reputation, even though they were still anti-Republican, anti-conservative, anti-American in a lot of their spin. They had to be a little more careful in they couldn't be as, what's the word I'm looking for here? I don't know, so I guess I'll look for another word. They couldn't be as out in the open. They couldn't be as up front. You know, they had to put on the pretense of being objective, of being impartial, when in fact they weren't. But the thing of it is, they made a lot of political hay about Ronald Reagan's age. Donald Trump is essentially the same age as Ronald Reagan when he was elected and took the oath of office. All throughout both terms of Ronald Reagan's administration, he was categorized as an absent-minded, doddering old fool, a man who, it was a B-movie actor and had gone soft in the head, which, you know, it wasn't even anywhere close to the truth. Now, in the last couple of years of his administration, was he suffering from early onset Alzheimer's? Yes. But up until that point, the man was solid. I've read the Reagan diaries. Ronald Reagan was a remarkably intelligent man. Don't let yourself be fooled. But they're doing the same thing. I digress a little bit there. They're doing the same thing to Donald Trump that they did to Ronald Reagan. And although in those days, I don't remember anyone actively thinking that they had a Chinaman's chance in hell of actually removing Ronald Reagan from the presidency via the 25th Amendment. But apparently these fools today, Katie, bar the door, they think so. They think they have a shot at it. Again, like I said, the media and the Never Trumpers and the people in the Republican Party, they just hate Donald Trump for whatever the reasons are. They hate the guy. They're like little kittens, and he has a laser pointer. And he was circumvented the media because for a long, long time, the establishment media had been and were correct in considering themselves the informational gatekeepers of the presidency. If the president wanted to get a message out, got to have a press conference. Excuse me. And we're back. I think I swallowed a bug, but I'm all right. Everything's okay now. And where were we? We were talking about Donald Trump and Ronald Reagan being crazy. Yeah, crazy like foxes is basically what that is. Crazy like foxes. This isn't going to work any more than any of the other things that Donald Trump has been assailed with in this, you know, short 1 year, first year into his first administration. Excuse me, one more minute. And we're back again and sounding a lot better. Something just went down the wrong pipe. Anyway, I'm okay. Don't worry. And we'll get back to it. So by tweeting, by entering into the arena of the Twitterverse and openly, you know, counterpunching on everyone, whether it's CNN, whether it's Rosie O'Donnell, whether it's Roseanne Barr, it doesn't matter who it is, Donald Trump hits back. If you hit Donald Trump, he hits you back. And a lot of times he hits back, you know, pretty hard. Case in point. And not only Donald Trump, a lot of these guys bring this stuff on themselves. Kathy Griffith is a prime example of that. A&E, you know, had a couple of shows, mid-level comedian. No Carol Burnett, no Lucille Ball. But, you know, doing whatever she does. She has her act. Well, she entered into this photo shoot with some left-wing kook photographer. And one of the pictures is a very austere, somber-looking Kathy Griffin holding up a rubber head, a mock-up of Donald Trump's decapitated melon. The kid saw it. You know, his son, Barron, saw it. And it kind of freaked the little boy out. And it upset a lot of people. And so she thinks she's being daring and provocative in doing these things. So the president hits back on her, and he hits back hard. And the ensuing backlash over people just looking at this picture and going, you idiot, this is disgusting. Yes, yeah, sure, you've got that right. First Amendment, we understand that. Just because you got the right to say something doesn't necessarily mean that you ought to out now do it. Because now her career is 6 feet under. Bookings dropped out from under her almost immediately. They got rid of her on the New Year's Eve thing, but I think they'd already gotten rid of her on the New Year's Eve thing. Okay. Well, anyway, she lost that. She, you know, she's a sad sack. She's going over to Europe, and she's talking about what a great hit she is over there. But at the same time, she does YouTube videos fundamentally begging to get gigs back in the States. But nobody wants to touch her because what she did was so classless in this multiple level, multiple media hate fest and foaming at the mouth rage over Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump didn't cancel all those gigs, that, you know, all her engagements. No, obviously people who were offended and shocked and outraged at this and considered it classless, they said, you know what? No. I've been running a comedy club for 40 years, and I've had Carlin, I've had Pryor, I've had Andrew Dice Clay, not you, honey. No. It's not going to happen. So, you know, these people, but Kathy Griffin wants to make it look as though, you know, she said in her first press conference, Donald Trump broke her. She thought that he had broke her. He didn't break her. She broke herself by bringing on this onslaught of negative media to where everyone thinks, you know, she's a creep to the point she has to leave the country. She left the country. So there you go. Well, I'll tell you what, we're down to the bottom of the hour, and I'm going to find something to play. That's what I'm going to do. And quite frankly, all this talking makes a man thirsty. We're going to cut to a brief musical instrumental interlude. And we'll be back with more Conservatives Perspective right after that. No, my God, the American Brand Radio Initiative. Sorry about that. We'll be back with more of the American Brand Radio Initiative right after this. Welcome back, all you hip cats and kittens. James Bostic here, the American Brand Radio Initiative, and as promised, our good friend Scott Kesterson. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Good, James. How are you doing today?
I am on top of my game, bud. Feeling good, got a positive attitude and everything.
Well, that's good, especially in a time in when we're seeing the progressive left trying to mount a counterattack. That's a good thing to have.
We got to accentuate the positive, man. As advertised, tonight we were going to talk about the rise and fall of Steve Bannon. Did the Kingmaker aspire to one day be king himself? And, Scott, what do you think, man?
Well, here's what – I mean, obviously the coup d'etat, this whole thing is that the news tonight broke that he resigned from Breitbart News. And I think it's Steve Bannon played some pretty big – I think there's a couple of parts about this. So let me start with Steve Bannon was working very closely with President Trump, and I have no doubt that his departure was in part a strategy to allow him greater latitude to work the field of the populist movement and be more effective outside than in with the knowledge that he had. There's increasing indications that – are you still there, James? Just want
to, yeah, I'm here. Right here.
Okay. Okay, things just went real quiet, so I was asking. There's increasing indications that the news that broke on Weinstein that started that whole Hollywood unravel came from the Breitbart News Intelligence Group. And so there's no question that he's been somewhat effective. But Steve Bannon was a shadow guy. He was a guy in the background. Nobody really knew much about him until the election came. He became chief strategist. And then Steve Bannon launched into the front. Now, here's what I'm going to say about leading on these sorts of organizations. And I'm speaking from very, very personal experience. It is one thing to be in the shadows. It is another thing to put your head out there for everybody to lop off. And you better have a strong basis of what you're doing. And you better know what you're doing, because just like you know what happened to me and getting your head damn near lopped off by the institution that took me down for 20 days, put me in jail, and forced me into a plea bargain.
Right.
You get to a place where you really doubt yourself and you really doubt whether you're effective. That's one way. Another way is, and I think what's happened here with Steve Bannon is that he got out there, he got his ego pretty big. He jumped out there with Roy Moore. He went head-to-head with President Trump. I don't think that that was a bad strategy because, Roy Moore was a good candidate. But Steve Bannon doesn't, as much as he was good at orchestrating from behind, Steve Bannon wasn't a good in-the-front trench fighter. And I've said this many times. I appreciate and like what Steve Bannon has been advocating. But the problem is that when he jumped out there in front, he tried to take the media on with the media, meaning he tried to take, go after the media with Breitbart. And it's a knife fight. And if you go into a knife fight, you're going to get cut. I say that all the time. Anybody that has ever studied knife fighting knows that you never walk into a knife fight without the expectation that you're going to get cut or stabbed. See, Buck Bannon got butchered. His candidate lost, and he put it all on the line. And he went, he took on everybody in one shot. Anybody's ever played the game of hearts or spades, it's shooting the moon. And he shot the moon, and he lost. And from that point, once you start to lose, had he won, it'd be one thing. But he lost. He put his cards all in one basket on Roy Moore. And in doing so, then he... they're going to use everything against him now, and they're going to make a big deal out of it. He pissed off a lot of people. He's got the institution behind him. They started to mock him. Then his comments that he made to Wolf came out, and those were comments that, whether he said them or intending to have them published or not, he should have known better. You don't talk to some retard like that about those interpersonal feelings. And at the level of D.C., you don't say those things unless you expect them to be published. There's a lot of strong indications, and also a lot of the leaks coming out of the White House were him. He had open rifts with Trump family, and his comments crossed the line with President Trump. Now, some of that, from President Trump's optic, is he's used it through an advantageous lens to be able to take advantage of that power, to use his power and his leverage to distance himself from, you know, the Breitbart, the conservative. But I don't think it's been a positive thing, because at the end of the day, it's completely affected, it's energized the left in negative ways for the right. And I don't think Steve Bannon was thinking about much other than his own gaining of power and his building his own power base in this alternative party. And that's where, you know, he talks about being a naval officer. Well, fine, we're not doing surface warship strategies. We're doing covert strategies is the way you win this war. And he failed. And so we saw somebody hit a maximum zenith, I mean, under President Trump's chief strategist, and then with a lot of the infighting and bickering, and now we're learning that if we listen to President Trump's comments, there were leaks that were coming from Steve Bannon, which seems to have been one of the reasons he was let go. And then we hear these comments from Wolf in his book, Fire and Fury. And you really have to ask, you know, who the hell was Steve Bannon? What was he? Who was he all along? And was he a confused, you know, was he a confused New York trader, a Wall Street guy that got on board with the populist movement but still had his foot in Goldman Sachs? I don't know. But what I do know is that while he made some good impact, his popular support has fallen to the tubes. Breitbart can't keep him around. He's too much of a liability because he's put himself at odds with the president. The president isn't going to accept his apology. And it was late in coming anyway. I mean, what the hell was that about? I don't know. So we've seen a real strong figure for populist movement burn themselves to the ground, in part because what I think is it was too much of thinking towards your ego and your own power and not about thinking towards what you're trying to build. And not understanding what the liability is when you step into the front end of a gun of the public eye. You're looking down the barrel of treachery when you're on the front lines. And I think President Trump's tweets were accurate. Steve Bannon thought winning was easy, and winning isn't easy. Winning is damn hard. So there's another part of this story of how President Trump's capitalizing on it, but as far as Steve Bannon, I mean, this is truly the rise and fall of Steve Bannon. He will be, at best, a marginalized figure. I think with this book, I think he had in mind that he was going to try to use that. If you kind of look at what he's doing right now, he's distancing himself from Breitbart, distancing himself from the Republican Party. My guess is he's going to go back into either, you'll either see him surface as a strategist, or you may even see him run as a third-party candidate. But he lacks key backing now. If you listen to Alex Jones, Alex Jones thinks that he's been a globalist the whole time. I have a hard time dealing with that one. But he lost Mercer's backing, and his main backer now is a Chinese globalist. So what does that say? You know? And the irony is that even Matt Drudge, who is, you know, he's kind of a, I would say he's a tepid Trump supporter. And Matt Drudge was just basically called him schizophrenic, you know. And I think that some of that is this consumption of power. People get into these power places and they get around the president and they start dealing with the corruption in D.C. and seeing all the things. They're going to, you know, I'm going to wage war against D.C., wage war against the establishment. And, you know, it's one thing to wage war. It's another thing to openly start calling out your targets and going after them, right? And...
So,
there's my
Well, let me ask you this then. Let's further expound upon it. I guess he probably realized as soon as this thing went sour that, because if you've read anything on Breitbart concerning this flare up, they've not held anything back that I can see. You know, they didn't. Establishment type media, if a story is negative or doesn't trend the way they want it to go, you know, they just ignore it completely, or they'll convolute the story itself and switch it and make it part of what they want it to be.
Well,
how do you think this affects, I guess the question I was going to get to was, how do you think this affects the survivability of Breitbart News, the establishment that we know, since this has happened with Bannon?
I think it only makes them stronger. I think Breitbart's played their cards really well. They've kept good news coming. I don't think that if you read the comments of people aren't connecting Bannon to Breitbart. Bannon stepped away from Breitbart, came back to Breitbart, and then burned his bridges and stepped out. People are still going to Breitbart. I think Breitbart's going to have to do some good legwork. There's no doubt. I mean, they've got a little bit of a stain on them right now. But the fact that Bannon is gone is going to help them.
Well, and I think, too, if you look back over the stories, you know, how they've reported this thing, they never cut the guy any slack. I mean, I think they did as objective a job as you could do, given the circumstances and given the parties involved.
Well, and I agree with that. I mean, they weren't giving him any, you know, whipped cream, so to speak.
No, he didn't get a pass. They laid it out there is what I'm thinking, that has to help them.
Oh, it does. I mean, I'm one that still stands that, you know, I think the critical point here is it had to do with hubris. And I mean this. Steve Bannon got out there because he was Steve Bannon, and he got on that trail with Roy Moore, and he threw it all in, man. He went because he saw that as his – I mean, that was literally the Statue of Liberty play for him. Man, we pull this off. We get the energized base. We can swing the Republican Party this way or break off into a third party. All we need is one candidate like this and a big divisive win and pummel the left. What he ended up doing was pummeling the right. And that's the sad part about it, is that he got in there, and when they started coming after Roy Moore on his sexual scandals, there's ways to fight that, okay? But Steve didn't have the tactical maneuverability skills, the tactics and maneuver skills, what I'm trying to say, to outflank his enemy. And I've said this many times on my own shows, had we taken Judge Roy Moore and placed him into the American brand framework, which is faith, knowledge, and values, and done the same for his competitive candidate, voters would have had a way to filter through the propaganda stream. We know that a couple of those accusers were straight out paid, probably all of them, and the other part about this whole thing is that no one has ever brought up the fact that in that era, dating young girls under the age of 18 was common. It wasn't illegal. It was common because that's how things were done in some of the old world.
Well,
start to get,
you know,
marriage laws. And go ahead.
My grandmother was 15 years old when she got married.
Right. And people, you know,
that's two generations back. Yeah.
Right. And people are like, oh, that's ridiculous. It's not ridiculous. It's the way America used to be. We were a different type of country then. We weren't rigidly driven by, you know, you could drink when you were 18. Some places you could drink when you were 16. It was a different world then. And so what the left did masterfully is they overlaid a rewrite of history. They revised history by applying today's rules to a past person. And, man, there was not a single counter swing on that, defending Moore from his – instead, everyone was on their heels. That's not true. That's a liar. This is a liar. They're paid – that's not the way you fight these things. And when you start going, and this is what I call trench fighting, when you get into that trench and you start swinging a knife with a knife, you are going to get cut. Problem is this time, you know, if you want to say there were swords or axes, they had axes coming to Steve Bannon. And not only did Steve Bannon lose after being fired by President Trump, or released or whatever. But he also lost something big. He lost a position for the Republicans. Now, this is something people have to really look at, and this is something I've been talking about. I'll be talking about a lot more. When you get into the fall election, everybody's looking again for that great candidate. There's not great candidates out here right now. There's a lot of turds. And you're going to have to shovel a lot of crap and expect that there's going to be a lot of turds out there that you're going to have to vote in, because the change in the demographics of the electoral body is going to take generations. It's not going to happen in one electoral course. Okay? D.C. is truly a sewer. The magnitude and level and depth of corruption in D.C. is beyond anything most people can imagine. There, when you go over to Reston, Virginia, the mall out in Reston, there's two malls in Reston. They're side by side. One mall is for the common folk. And if you go across the road where the Hyatt Regency is tied to, you find another mall. And it's big. And it's got all of the high-end stores. And I don't mean kind of high-end stores. I mean like high-end stores. You've got Maseratis and Porsches on display there. You've got the 10 stores, Montblanc and others. You have watch stores where the average watch price is $5,000 and up. You have Coach designer. Now, keep in mind, this is Reston, Virginia. What's in Reston, Virginia? It's where a lot of the intelligence community is. And it happens to be the big defense contractor hub. It is the highest per capita income area in the United States, and that's completely taxpayer funded. Okay? And those aren't industries that have cropped up creating innovations like technology companies. This is industries that have cropped up based on taxpayer dollars. We have a level of corruption in D.C. that, the average American can't even imagine. They piddle around with numbers like, $1 million is like pocket change, the way they throw it around up there. And the rest of America is actually struggling. But that level of corruption doesn't go away overnight, even with a president that's mounting an attack. And, the other thing here, too, is with Steve Bannon doing what he did, and no one's really linking this, and I'm just saying this, he's put President Trump in a position where he can't really listen as much to some of his core base now, because Steve Bannon just went off the rails. We're seeing compromises now on DACA, and you have the criticisms flying, Gateway Pundit, you've got it, Zero Hedge, Breitbart News, others are criticizing him for his compromise on DACA. And yet you have to sit here and go, okay, well, he's at least trying to get measures through. They're saying, well, now he's retracting on his border wall. Not really. He was all along, if you listen to Kelly and Mattis, they told him he didn't need a physical wall for 2,000 miles. They just needed a wall with increased security. But these small events, when you have – Bannon was not a small event in Alabama. It was a big event because at the end of the day, he affected a loss in the Republican Party, in the Congress, that has allowed the Democrats to make a step forward and to catapult this forward. So the question is, who would have been the better candidate? The one that Bannon backed that ended up getting completely trashed and pummeled because he didn't have the strategy in the ground game to go after it and win for Roy Moore? Or the establishment candidate that President Trump backed, that if Bannon had backed, would have won and would have beat the other guy, almost guaranteed, pretty easily. Yes, he was establishment, but there is this give and take everybody has to have right now. We can't just change everything all at once because the candidate depth is not there. And most importantly, the understanding of how to implement effective strategies is not there. There's something we're working on in the American brand, and we're going to be working on it all year long. And I started it prematurely, but we're getting as we get our chapters going, we're going to be pushing it this year. And you and I talked about it last night, granular intelligence, okay? And it really applies to the Roy Moore thing. When you talk about electoral maps and where counties sit, we have that data. We know where people voted pink, purple, red, green, blue, whatever. And you can see it county by county, and those maps are available online, and you can get down and really see the granular level of what people did in the election. You can see it county by county. But what that doesn't tell you is, what are your influencers on the ground? What's your school board makeup, and how are they influencing your kids? What's your city council makeup, and what policies are they moving that are going to be towards Make America Great or America First, or are they going to go for globalist policies? What's your mayoral makeup? What's your county makeup? And why do I say all this? And how does it relate to what happened in Alabama? Everything relates to that. Because that granular understanding of the political bias and social bias, it wasn't in the hands to take on a candidate like, to embrace a candidate like Roy Moore, would have been absolutely essential. Because had we really known what that granular knowledge was, not just trying to influence big media buys and stuff like that, which they were very effective at, there are great ground-level strategies that could have been implemented to really back a candidate like Roy Moore had he really been the right candidate. But that's the other thing is, you know, Bannon swooped in there as if Roy Moore was flawless. He wasn't flawless. He had stink all over his shoes. Every candidate in the country right now at some level has stink all over their shoes.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate here for just a minute. Let's say, all right, and here's what I want, and the question I want to ask you now, and here's why I'm asking it. What do you think? Because I don't think his survivability, I don't think that Doug Jones' survivability, you know, beyond the midterms, I think that's as far as he's going to go. With a positive momentum, and I'm not saying that this thing with Steve Bannon is not significant, but to me, it went on for a week, and that's all anybody's talked about it. Yeah, there's going to be some ripple effects where he's resigning from Breitbart, and we're going to see him pop up here and there. But in terms of other feuds that Donald Trump has had with lesser lights, this one was over very quickly. Poof, it flared. It was done. And I think as long as there's enough forward momentum, and I'm just speaking in terms of this Roy Moore, Doug Jones thing. As long as the president has enough forward momentum and he continues to do what he's doing, if he just keeps on winning, baby, then I don't think this loss by Roy Moore is going to be that significant. We know what Doug Jones is going to do. We know what side Doug Jones is going to be on. He's not going to have a sudden change of heart. He's not going to have a road to Damascus moment once he's sworn in and say that he sees the light and he's switching his party affiliation or anything like that. We're not going to see that. I just don't know. It is a significant loss at this time, but by the midterms, all things being equal, and the president is able to continue his successes, I don't see it as being that significant.
Well, I guess the context is probably not, I mean, the long term, you're right, James. I'm talking more about the momentum heading into 2018. I do think it's significant. And it's something that, because what it's done is it's energized the left significantly around some key narratives, and they've proven a strategy that has worked. That's the part that really gets under my skin more than anything, is they have proven that if they go after a strategy of sexual scandal, that they can defeat a public with their propaganda barrage. Now, that's when I get back to what I said before of having to educate the public and where we're going into this and getting serious about educating the public on the principles of faith, knowledge, values. People have to be willing to start opening their eyes and stepping away from this ridiculousness of the propaganda. I mean, I'm one who's been attacked by it, and in September they were unleashed on me. And there's ways around it, there's ways through it. But you've got to be, Bannon wasn't prepared for that, and what he did is he basically de facto legitimized a strategy for the left, okay? There were so many ways on a ground game that you could have beat that, so many ways. And it wasn't done. So, from the standpoint of bigger politics, it's going to be a passing event. But I think that in terms of energizing funding, motivation, getting the left, you know, rallying up and getting them energized for a big fight in 2018, I do think it was fairly significant. And I think that it was, I think Roy Moore could have won with the right team. I think that, but again, I think that there was too much hubris and, like, you know, like Bannon, I can campaign with him side by side, and that's all that's needed. That's not all that's needed. And I'm not saying that's all that was done, but there was a lot of that, right?
Right.
And there's, and with that, you know, and then on top of it, to have this back end, this wolf thing come out, he didn't deny it, by the way. He just said those were statements made in the context of, which means what we accused him of being fake news, it wasn't fake news, he actually said those things. So that gets into the whole issue of who the hell is Steve Bannon, right? I mean, if you read the statement that came out today by Breitbart and the new CEO, Larry Solow, it wasn't, it didn't give any kudos to Bannon. It just acknowledged he was a part of our legacy. We're happy for his contributions, and he helped us to accomplish things. Thanks. Goodbye. Pack up your bag, and don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out, quite frankly.
So we put this down to I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, and that's kind of that's what you've left with your legacy, and I think it's just a good reminder overall that we need people to lead us into change. We need leaders in this movement for change. But it isn't about the leader. It's about what we're trying to do for our country. And I think that's where I get a little jaded on this Bannon thing, because it's not about, you know, I'm with CEO of Breitbart News. I'm going to declare war on the institution. You know, I run this program now at night called Wage War, but the wage war principle is waging war with faith, knowledge, values by the people. I'm not trying to run out here in front of everybody riding my white horse with my banner that says American brand on it and lead everybody to the great glorious fight that we're going to have on the plains of wherever. I mean, there's ways to fight this thing, and we need to be active in doing that. But, you know, I really had the sense that Steve Bannon was like, I'm leading the charge, and, you know, maybe I'll even run for president. And I really think there was something to that. So, in a kind of a close on this whole thing, because I'm looking at our time, I think it's, on one hand, in the short term, it's an energized the left. I think in the long term, it's probably been the best thing that could happen to the right.
Pride goeth before a fall, and a haughty spirit before utter condemnation.
Yes.
Cat got too big for his britches. That's what we're saying here.
You did.
Ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Scott.
No. We're good.
I was going to say, we've been talking with our buddy Scott Kesterson from The American Brand. The American Brand has a Facebook presence, The American Brand, obviously, theamericanbrand.org. Those of you who are out there and listening, and I know we're getting listeners more and more all the time, and it really jacks me up about that when it comes in terms of the American Brand Radio Initiative. If you're interested in helping to get American Brand chapters started in your home state, in your community, in your neighborhood, get in touch with us, theamericanbrand.org. And, of course, again, you can inbox us at The American Brand on Facebook, our Facebook presence as well. Scott, good show tonight, dude. Good show.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. And I always love being on here, James. Thank you. I'll see you on Thursday, right?
Yes, sir. Thursday, same bat time, same bat channel. Appreciate you so much. I know I'll be talking to you in the meantime, but be safe out there. Take good care of yourself, and we'll be back with Scott Kesterson on Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Have a great evening.
Thanks, Scott. Well, guys, that's the end of the road. I'm about out of gas. We're at 2 minutes to the end of the show, and I'm just – well, actually, we're 60 seconds before the end of the show. So I guess I'm knocking off right on time. We will be back next Thursday at 7 p.m., with the American Brand Radio Initiative, followed immediately at 8 o'clock by our buddy Mark Hoffman on with Patriot Nation Radio Live, which is also simulcast with the good people over at News Without Filters, a Stidham Media Corporation. God bless. We'll be back Thursday. You guys take good care of yourselves, and we'll see you then.